The CLOCA report refers to the dynamic beach hazard in Port Darlington. And CLOCA cites this hazard in making the recommendation that the historic communities on West Beach and Cedar Crest Beach should be removed. This presentation illustrates three important facts. First, the dynamic beaches in Port Darlington are not a hazard to residents. Second, the current high Lake Ontario level is not the main cause of danger. And just a little flashback on that note, the community's current round of political engagement on this issue began after a storm in November of 2015. In the autumn low water period. The damaging wave uprush at that time led to a petition to council in June 2016. And third, the shoreline erosion due to St. Mary's Pier results in ongoing danger every year, even when lake levels are low. Dynamic beaches change often. They alternately grow and shrink in response to winds, waves, and water levels. But if the natural cycle is disrupted and a beach shrinks every year but never grows back, then before long there is no beach and no dynamic beach. Before the St. Mary's Pier was built, Cedar Crest had a dynamic beach, and West Beach still does. The dynamic beaches play a key role in moderating wave force. And we'll see the results of waves on shoreline that still has a dynamic beach compared to adjacent shoreline where the dynamic beach has been lost to erosion. The following video clips will illustrate this varying impact of one storm this spring. The clips were shot during a one-hour period on Wednesday, May 1, 2019. The first clip was shot from a single viewpoint in the parquet where West Beach meets Cove Road Beach. It shows waves on West Beach, Cove Road Beach, and Cedar Crest Beach. Where the dynamic beaches still exist, the waves roll out along those beaches as wave energy dissipates. And where dynamic beaches are gone, the waves slam into the rock wall barriers with full force. So first in this video clip, we'll be looking east and then to the west. Okay, now we'll take a close-up look from Cedar Crest beaches during that storm, during the same 60-minute period. The clips were shot within minutes of the previous video. And I just want to point out, this is not at the height of the storm. This is mid to late afternoon. Now, to recap on the effects of shoreline erosion, these two videos were shot in the same hour with the same Lake Ontario level, the same wind, the same waves, but the impact of those waves varies drastically. The key factor, that one stretch of the beach has been starved of sediment and has eroded. This presents us with a choice. Fixing the erosion problem, as outlined by the Baird report, is the right and the fair thing to do. Not fixing the problem means exposing residents to personal danger and financial catastrophe in all seasons, every year. The Baird report presents engineering solutions that will remedy the shoreline erosion. Baird's solution will correct a historical injustice and will cost taxpayers much less than a buyout of homes would cost. Since 1972, five reports have reached the same conclusion: the St. Mary's Pier starved Cedar Crest Beach of sediment, causing shoreline erosion. This community needs an engineering solution to restore the shoreline now. It's time to save Cedar Crest Beach. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Members of committee, do we have any questions? I don't see any questions. Thank you for the presentation.
Okay.
So for members of committee, as these all deal with the same issue, we'll look for one resolution to deal with all of the CLOCA reports, the shoreline hazard delegations to deal with them. Ms. Witski, welcome.
Thank you, and thank you for hearing me this morning. Good morning. As you can see by the educational information next to my name, I'm a geologist and I live on Cedar Crest Beach Road, so I get to watch it year round. What I can do is I can read things like hydrologic models and stormwater management plans and all of the different studies that Councillor Neal referred to earlier and understand them and understand whether they're well done or not and whether they're making predictions that are likely to happen or not. And that's what I wanted to bring to you today, was a citizen's take on some of the reports that you are waiting years to get. So what do we actually see when we live down there? If we start on Cedar Crest Beach Road, winds from the east and the south are what cause our problems. As Bart just beautifully showed us, the waves pile up on Port Darlington's shore. Now, they come higher for two reasons. One is called a seiche. So when the waves keep piling in and piling in and piling in one direction, Lake Ontario actually gets a little bit deeper on that side and a little bit shallower on the New York State side, just temporarily with all that energy pushing. So it brings it higher than even its static level. And then on top of that, there's the size of the waves. And as you saw, the waves will come over shoreline defenses, be that concrete walls, lots of big stones, sandbag walls. Now, when they run up on the beach, as they do on the other side, the energy is absorbed, there's no harm. But on Cedar Crest Beach Road, the beach is gone. It's been gradually eroded away since the St. Mary's Pier was built. And the waves are hitting very close to the houses now, and they're hitting those defenses really hard. If the water can't flow back out again, it pools around the houses. And also in the vacant lots. And the municipality knows, and Fire Chief Weir knows very well, that the municipality has to come down and pump out their vacant lot because the water can't get back out again right now. Okay, but if it can get back out again, you see an awful lot of erosion. So those waves have a lot of energy, and they take materials with them, and they go back out to the lake again. And that large coniferous tree that you saw in Bart's film actually has had a lot of the soil taken away from around its root systems, and that tree may be lost. One property in the 2017 storms had 36 tons of soil and rock removed from their property, and they're behind the very large rocks. And this year, in the May 1st storm, one home actually did have foundation damage from the wave energy. So it's getting very real down there, and that family had to be moved out temporarily. So let's talk about the wetland and the CLOCA studies. So CLOCA has done a number of studies that are forming part of the basis of the motion you have in front of you that talk about all the flood hazard risks in this area. And their big one in terms of their studies is supposedly coming from the watershed behind us and into the wetlands. And the wetland behind Cedar Crest Beach Road is fed from the town of Bowmanville through Westside Creek. It goes around the St. Mary's Quarry, and it arrives in the wetland behind us. Ideally, that is supposed to drain itself naturally. There's a barrier beach that builds up on the Lake Ontario side of it. And when the water gets high enough in the marsh, it breaks through that beach and the marsh drains into the lake. And we see that really often. That happens a lot. But when Lake Ontario gets too high, that can't happen. And the water builds up in the marsh. So we saw that this past weekend. Water built up in the marsh. It was way above Lake Ontario level. The beach did not break. And yesterday, we had about 4 inches of water in the low spots on Cedar Crest Beach Road. So there we were. Okay, this year then, I'm at the bottom point. I sent in this presentation on Friday before we had any water on the road, but this is where we are right now. So what does CLOCA's computer simulation of the watershed say? They've got a hydrologic model, and it's all computer simulation, and what it says is that every 2 years, we're going to see water right up to the level of Cedar Crest Beach Road. And remember, this is from 2007. So this isn't recent. Nobody living down there had seen water on that road for at least 50 years. And so this model, you can see, is overestimating what we see. Every 5 years, they said we were going to see about 0.1 meters, which is 10 centimeters, which is the 4 inches we saw yesterday. And when you see that kind of water on there, they're expecting it to flow at 0.8 meters a second. That's 0.8 meters. Move by that every second. That's your flow rate. Yesterday, there was no flow. There was no flow in 2017 with water at the same depth. This is overestimating the power and the energy of the flooding from the river. Computer models do this. And I read the 2013 study of this watershed that looked at its flooding potential. And it used these numbers as a basis and carried on from there to look at the size of the floodplain. It was a floodplain model, basically. So they've got numbers that are overestimating how high the water is going to get and how fast it's going to flow. Look at this look at this 100-year and this regional flood. Regional is Hurricane Hazel, by the way. 100-year is the 100-year worst storm. You're talking about half a meter deep of water on that road flowing at over a meter a second. Look at 50-year, 20 centimeters. We've never seen water on the road in the last 50 years, flowing at a meter a second, that much. That's a lot. So, overestimation. So what does that mean to us then? CLOCA's model really overestimates the depth and the flow of water from the watershed. This pattern of flooding they predict has never happened. Now, is this unusual in the world of computer modeling? No, it's not. Most models start out overestimating. And then with time, you feed what actually happens back into them, and you make them quite a bit more accurate. An example I gave to CLOCA's board of directors recently was weather mapping. The weather man used to be really bad 30 years ago. We all remember lots of predictions that just never came true. And you'll notice that they've refined their models and they've gotten much better through time because now there's an economic impact to some of their modeling. Schools close, buses get canceled if you're predicting a great big winter storm. And if it never comes, the public and governing bodies start to get pretty angry with you. So they've been refining their models. This model gets run every 10 years or so and has never been validated. CLOCA admitted that, CLOCA staff admitted that, and it's never been calibrated. And those are the two ways that you feed actual data back in. So it's perfectly reasonable that this model would be overestimating the hazard from the rivers. So what does that mean for us? Well, unfortunately, CLOCA took this overestimation and they made some simulated aerial photos that they've been showing you and they've been showing us, and they're scaring everybody with them. These are not real photos. These are aerial photos of what it would look like in the 100-year storm and in the historic storm and how high the flooding would get. But they're being based on a model that's never been refined. And that's why they're coming forward and saying it doesn't matter whether it's wave or uprush because the river flooding is going to get them anyways. Well, it's not. And it's on the basis of the fact that they feel we're going to flood from the rivers anyways that they're saying, this is why we need to go down and buy these people out. This is why there's no way to fix this problem. They're getting multiple hazards from multiple directions. Well, we're not. And with the funding cuts to CLOCA now, the chances that they're going to refine these models are even lower. They were pretty low budget contracts, scientific contracts to begin with. And now, the money for validation certainly won't be there. Meanwhile, on West Beach, as Bart just showed you, beach hasn't been eroded. Now, the CLOCA model there is even more extreme in terms of what's going to come at them from the rivers. This is where they're predicting there's going to be 7 feet of water on the road there. We've only seen water on the road there once in the last 50 years. It was only a few inches deep, and that was in 2017. So, once again, a computer model is going to start off being overestimated.
I'm going to have to interrupt you. Could I have a motion for a 2-minute extension, Councillor Neal, seconded by Councillor Hooper. Thank you.
I appreciate that. So what does this tell us? The predictions for flooding from the rivers and streams by CLOCA are unrealistically high. They're not in line with what we're seeing, and they're not in line with what good thorough science would tell you. But look at bullet two. In the CLOCA report, it says that during a 50-year, 100-year, and regional storm flood event, the combination of depth and velocity of flood water would create conditions that could result in people being swept away. That's at 1 and 1.5 meters a second of flow. We don't see that. That's sensationalism, and it does not belong in a scientific report by a responsible government body. That's my point today. Scare tactics are not the way to set policy. I'm going to ask you to listen to reasonable science and the evidence based on 50 years of observations. Thank you.
Thank you. Members of committee, do we have any questions? Councilor Neal.
Yeah, thanks to the chair. So I guess am I correct then, you're saying the threat's not from the marsh or the river flowing into the marsh, it's from the lake. Is that pretty
That's
much?
Correct.
But high water is still the big issue, right?
Well, as Bart showed, it can happen at any time. High water is an issue. The waves are higher. But we've had problems with wave uprush causing damage every season, every year, before the 2017 high lake levels.
So through the chair, are you on the sort of the west or east side of Cedar Crest Beach Road?
I am across the bridge. So I'm truly on Cedar Crest Beach Road, and I have the large rocks in front of the house.
Okay, so what's happening to the front of your property? Is it?
Actually, I'm the house that's lost 36 tons of material.
Oh, that was your house?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All went into the lake? Or?
Yeah, it all went into the lake in 2017. We replaced it, and we've lost about 30 ton again this year.
I see, okay. So what's your ask in terms of, at this point?
Actually, that's on my last slide. So this is what we would love to do. Don't consider proposed voluntary disposition and further building restrictions. Raise the roads a little bit, and we won't have a problem with water sitting on them like we had yesterday, and then protect Cedar Crest Beach Road from the waves. We like the solutions in the Baird report. There's two of them the community really supported.
Okay, in terms, I guess the... What's your sense of your group's advocacy, what the provincial and federal governments are prepared to do? Have you got any sense of where they land on that through the chair?
Well, that's interesting. What are the governments prepared to do? We haven't even asked that question yet. I haven't seen them at the table with municipal council and CLOCA yet. So it'll be really great to see the province and the feds there. And for all of us to sit down and talk about funding.
So has anybody been in touch with our, like the MPPs?
Actually, I'm going to ask Sarah Delicate to answer those questions. Right. If you could wait.
I guess what I'm wondering is the request that Clarington do number, you know, this breakwater, I guess. Is that?
No, that's not the request. No, that is not the request. I mean, okay. Clarington can do the roads, and that would be lovely. We realize that doing the breakwater is going to take a serious effort among multiple levels of government, and we know how expensive it is. We get that. And we're not here asking Clarington to do that, but we're going to work with you to get it done.
I mean, the Pickering had a lot of work done in their waterfront with a combination of federal, provincial, TRCA, you know, and some municipal involvement, but
yes.
it was really geared at public use, right? So how does that work if it's private, really a private property? Like I'd like to see something happen where there was a public aspect to it, you know?
There's a major difference here. In the case of, I'm more familiar with the Rouge, the groins at Rouge and the stones there. In the case where it's in those cases, there was not a permitted construction project that changed things. In this case, St. Mary's Pier did starve Cedar Crest Beach Road of sediment. It was perfectly permitted. There was nothing wrong with the process. There was even an environmental assessment. And all of those studies recognized that Cedar Crest Beach Road would be starved of sediment. So Cedar Crest Beach Road wasn't at risk before. Whereas the Pickering waterfront, there has been no major construction project that has stopped anybody's sediment. So it's really hard to compare the two. I think we need to restore what Cedar Crest Beach Road used to have.
But through the chair, but my understanding is St. Mary's is just ignoring the whole issue, right? Nobody's taking them to task.
Well, that's not true that no one's taken them to task, because I'm on the community liaison committee with them. And I've been in meetings with them, and they often bring legal counsel. Understandably, as a corporation, they're not willing to talk about anything that casts any liability on them at this point in time. And I'm sure that's a financial legal consideration. So that's not a surprising behavior.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilor Anderson.
Hi, thank you for your presentation. I gather from what you're saying that the threat is from the lake rather than the marsh. I thought it was a dual threat from both the road, from the marsh, and the lake, but you're saying otherwise. So while I'm down there, I see the water coming in the road from the marsh.
Yes, you did. Yes, you can go down there and see that. It's dry today. It wasn't dry yesterday. And what happened is the lake came up really high, so the barrier beach wouldn't break. So the water in the marsh came up high because it wouldn't behave the way it was designed to behave. And actually, the barrier beach got broken yesterday, and today it's dry again.
Okay, so you're saying that we should, I assume, raise the level of the road?
Raise the level of the road, and you won't get the low spots flooding anymore, but what you will never get is what Cloca is saying, which is half a meter at Cedar Crest Beach Road and 7 feet of water on. That's not going to happen. Okay. Raising the road will be enough.
So, through the chair. So if you raise the road, what happens to the driveways, et cetera, and the private property? Say you're trying to get out, would that not impact the driveways as well?
There will be some impact where driveways are lower, but that's just ordinary grading. Roadwork's pretty routine. It's not difficult engineering.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Okay, do we have anything further? Thank you.
Thank you.
And the next delegate is Ms. Sarah Delicat.
Hi, good morning. My name is Sarah Delicat. I'm a resident of Cedar Crest Beach Road. I'm here today to talk about probability-based policy, which is ultimately about optimum action based on probability. So what we know is that in 1972, there was a planning document created for the St. Mary's Shipping Pier. And in 1972, St. Mary's own document predicted a complete interruption to littoral drift. This is a snippet out of that 1972 document with 100% probability. Long landfill project would pose a complete interruption to the littoral drift, resulting in accretion on the west side and erosion on the east side. The rates of accretion and erosion will be small, but the balance is very delicate to begin with. The balance will be completely upset, and the company may be liable to supply the downdrift areas to the east with sand that its structure trapped. Now, jump ahead to 2018. In the Baird report, they found exactly this: accretion on the west, depletion on the east. Now, if we jump from 1970s to 1992, this letter was written by Minister Ruth Greer, who was the Minister of the Ministry of the Environment at the time, September 10th. A shoreline regeneration work group will be established as part of the Greenway strategy to work with government, interest groups, industry, and the public to develop and implement shoreline management plans for the protection of the Lake Ontario shoreline in the Greater Toronto Bioregion. This area is to the east of St. Mary's Cement Company's dock is included in this process. Through this process, appropriate shoreline management and protection measures will be determined and implemented. 1994, from the Minister Wildman, Ministry of then the Environment and Energy. With respect to past erosion of the shoreline east of St. Mary's existing dock, the Ministry of Natural Resources has the authority under the Lakes and Rivers Improvement Act to require St. Mary's to remediate any erosion which has occurred, should they believe this to be necessary. An environmental assessment would not address the issue of past erosion. Any future erosion that might be caused by the dock expansion will be identified and addressed through the monitoring program, which MNR will be requiring as a condition of the approval of that dock expansion. I cannot tell you what happened with that. Now, Clarington did not approve the dock, nor did they endorse the pier or its expansion, but Clarington is left to deal with the consequences. So this is a staff report from Clarington, October 1995. The corresponding motion passed by council indicated that the municipality does not concur with the findings of the environmental assessment and review of the St. Mary's Cement Corporation dock expansion. The concern was that the impacts of the existing dock and the proposed expansion were not fully understood. The motion further requested that the Canadian Coast Guard require, as a condition of issuing their approval for dock expansion, a remedial plan for wetland loss and or shoreline impacts resulting from the existing and expanded dock. In addition, the establishment of a monitoring committee by the Canadian Coast Guard was requested, which would include representation from the municipality. The municipality recognized the erosion at that time and did not support the expansion of that pier. There have been 5 reports since 1972, with a probability of 100% that our shoreline is being starved by the St. Mary's Pier. We've already talked about the first one, the design report done in 1972 that said the long landfill project would pose a complete interruption to the littoral drift. 1990s, the Sandwell report commissioned by the province stated that the damage center C4, which was at Cedar Crest Beach, is a good candidate for beach nourishment. The beach is starved by St. Mary's Cement Pier. Third report, 1990, Brian Greenwood, geomorphologist. It is highly probable that the present St. Mary's Cement Corporation dock contributes to shoreline erosion and recession in the Port Darlington waterfront to the east. The mechanism is through sediment deficit in the total natural time average sediment budget. Your own staff report, 2017, report to the General Governance Committee states that the Cedar Crest Beach shoreline is contained in a littoral subcell defined by the St. Mary's Pier to the west and the Peter Rock Shoal in the east. St. Mary's Pier is listed as a primary littoral subcell barrier, which means that it appears to intercept upwards of 60% of a longshore sediment transport in the surf zone. The pier starves our shore. The fifth report, the Baird Report, commissioned by Aqua Solutions 2018, states that the pier at the St. Mary's are approximately 650 meters long. It is expected that they act as a complete barrier to a longshore movement of granular sediment, and therefore there is no exchange of granular sediment between the west and the east shores on either side of the piers. This means that St. Mary's would block any potential supply of sediment available to the westerly shore. So there's the pier, and this is where we are starved, and this is the quarry that took 45% of the wetland. The probability of this, that the shoreline has been starved by St. Mary's Cement, is 100%. If you want to expand beyond our own community, there is a marine institute called the Marine Biodiversity and Ecosystem EU Network. This is 94 European marine institutes. They have a report that says that although there are many natural causes of erosion, most of the causes of coastal erosion affecting coastal communities are due to human intervention in the transport process along the coasts and the reduction of supply to sand to the shorelines, and that the coastal structures that interfere with littoral transport are the most common cause of coastal erosion. If that still does not convince you, please just go back to your offices and put in the Google search, what is the number one cause of coastal erosion? And what you will find is that study after study after study across the world has coastal structures interfering with littoral transport as the most common cause of coastal erosion. There is no scenario where the St. Mary's Pier has not starved the shoreline, as was predicted in their own 1972 design report. Now, when you look at the CLOCA Port Darlington Shoreline Hazard Study, they have a slide on slide 11. And when they did their presentation to their CLOCA board, they said all shorelines erode. The shoreline erosion is a natural process and all shorelines erode. And this is the picture that they used to show that all shorelines erode. And you can see where the property lines run out into the lake. They were completely missing the context of this picture. If you actually zoomed out, what you would find is that this community is also east of a large jetty, right here. It is east of the Port Darlington Lighthouse. It is also starved. This exact image that they used to show that all shorelines erode was starved by another jetty. This video shows you the 1967 shoreline compared to the 2016 shoreline. So one of the other things that we hear, so you can see the overlay is the historic before the pier, and you can see that the shoreline disappears. We're at the east. We are traveling east. One of the things you often hear is that the houses were built closer to the lake and the houses expanded. And as you go through this, you'll see that the houses are actually exactly in the same footprint where they were. So we're continuing to move east. This is what the shoreline, that dynamic beach that Bart spoke about, is gone. This represented a dramatic loss to homeowners. Our property lines, some of us, for 40 feet, 50 feet, 60 feet into Lake Ontario. The houses are in the same footprints. We did not build our houses closer to Lake Ontario. Our houses got bigger, as most houses did in the last 50, 60, 70 years. Now watch what happens when you get to Cove Road. This is the most unbelievable thing. As you cross that bridge and we move into Cove Road, the erosion stops. You see, the line is exactly as it was, because Cove Road and West Beach Road have not suffered the erosion that is 100% from that St. Mary's Pier. Now, what? I'm probably going to need that two-minute extension, Mayor Foster.
We are. Thank you, Councillor Neal. Seconded by Councillor Anderson. All in support. Opposed? Carried. Thank you.
Thank you. So the CLOCA report talks about the 100-year flood, and this has a 1% chance of happening. The concept of the 100-year flood is that at any given year, you have a 1% chance that this is going to happen. Now, what you must understand when they talk about a 100-year flood, it is not water from Lake Ontario. This is not a massive tsunami from the lake coming down and crushing our houses. What this is a hurricane that stagnates on the upper watersheds. So in that hurricane model, it stagnates on the watershed, and so much water will stagnate there that 7 feet of water will rush down through Bowmanville, across the 401, and to our community, causing catastrophic flooding to our houses. It's so important you understand the context when they talk about that flooding. But I'd also invite you to consider what will be the impact to all of the homes that are going to be in the floodwaters that come from that hurricane sitting in the upper watershed. And my question to you is, will you be voluntarily disposing of all of those houses? Because that 100-year flood will not just decimate our community. Their own model indicates it comes from the upper watershed and it will bring it to our houses. It will take out the 401. The CLOCA's recommendation is a voluntary disposition program where the city buys up houses as they come up, one house at a time. Now, know the probability of this scenario, even based on the flawed modeling, is less than 1%. CLOCA acknowledges that it would take 50 to 70 years to acquire all of the houses, but in the meantime, CLOCA is recommending a policy change where if the houses flood, we cannot rebuild. We have a 100% chance that we will continue to face lake flooding from Lake Ontario without the Baird report implemented, without having shoreline protection. But they're not encouraging you to build policy based on that. They're encouraging you to base policy on a 1% probability of a hurricane stagnating in the upper watershed of Clarington. So my request is to please consider rejecting the policy recommendations of the CLOCA staff report. Those recommendations 100% put us in harm's way. I also ask you to consider the history of government decisions.
Ms. Delegate, I do need you to wind up.
Thank you, which puts us 100% in harm's way, and to pursue a shoreline protection strategy. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Members of committee, do we have any questions? Councillor Hooper.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Delegate, for coming forward this morning. Appreciate that. Excellent report. Excellent report from all the neighbors, too, in regards to this very serious situation. As you alluded to in some of your other delegates, you brought up a lot of issues in regards to a corporation. And with all of the information from the 70s report, as well as the Baird report, and I know we have a PDCR, Port Darlington Residents Committee that's been formed. Has any of this information been brought forward as representatives from your area and potentially probably ours too as well? And I'm not sure whether CLOCA has a representative that sits on the board or on that board as well. So has any of this information been brought forward to any of the committee meetings that have been held?
No. Councillor Hooper, are you talking about the working group? When you say committee, which committee?
The committee that representatives from your area as well as municipality sit on it too as well. I just wondered if any...
Okay, I believe you're referencing the working group. So Councillor Neal asked a question earlier about whether or not the province and the feds have been brought to the table. And council passed a motion quite some time ago that a working group come together of the feds, the province, CLOCA, residents, and that St. Mary's be invited to participate. There was a working group that was formed after that. The province and the feds were never at the table. I'm yet to see any kind of formal invitation for them to come to the table. And that it has been brought up. It's been discussed. It's St. Mary's legal representative was at those meetings. But in short, it has all been brought forward, and there's just been no forward motion on it. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
Sort of. So none of all this information in regards to the flooding and the littoral drift and all that in regards to beach starvation. So whenever that, does anybody from your committee bring that forward
at the, absolutely.
At these committee meetings?
Yes.
And what happens at the meetings?
Nobody's responsible. St. Mary's is not responsible. There's no evidence that the shoreline has been eroded. We continue to be in this place where it doesn't matter how often we bring forward the facts are ignored. So we're 2 years later, still having a conversation on whether or not the pier actually impacts us. We get told that on a very regular basis, that there's no evidence that the shore has been starved by the pier.
And I know we do get the reports that come to council, you know, committee and whatever, and I've asked the question a couple times in regards to why is there nothing in regards to, you know, what's happening down at Cedar Crest Beach and along that area. And I just wonder why we never get any sort of comments in regards to that. Is it because of a legal position that we're not allowed, that no one's allowed to discuss that? I mean, I understand about the stack emissions and things like that, but I just wonder why no one...
Councillor Hooper, I wish desperately I had an answer for you. There seems to be this, you just don't talk about it. Right, I do not have an answer. Even when CLOCA did their presentation to the CLOCA board, they hardly mentioned St. Mary's Pier. And this council, your council directed or requested that CLOCA study the impact of the pier. The CLOCA board expanded the scope of that, and we ended up with policy changes and 100-year flood mapping, and the Baird report got tucked aside. So we don't have an answer, but it's one of the requests that we have put to council is that we have been for years now banging our heads against a wall, and what we desperately wish for is for Clarington Council to stand behind us and shake your fists at the province and the feds that signed, gave permission with all of the right permits to say, you've done this to our community, you need to fix this. We seem completely unable to do it on our own.
Okay. Again, thank you very much for your answer and appreciate you being here this morning.
Thank you.
Councillor Anderson.
Thank you, Sarah, for being here and quite eloquent presentation as usual. Further to Councillor Neal touched on with the previous presenter. So your ask is that we forcefully get the province and the federal government involved, whether through a resolution of council. Is that what you're asking for? I don't think you, as a small municipality, we cannot really do the funding that's required there.
Without a doubt. And St. Mary's Pier went in with all the right permits. And you have your own historical record that says that we don't actually agree with your EA process. There actually was not a detailed EA process on the expansion, and the municipality objected seriously to that at that time as well. So throughout the process, the province has made commitments they did not follow through on. And I went and met with Minister Jakubowski's office within the last couple of months. So he is the Minister of the Ministry of Natural Resources and Forestry. And within 2 weeks, about 2 weeks ago, I received a very short one paragraph from their staff that says, thank you, Ms. Delificate, for coming to meet with us. There appears to be no evidence that the shoreline has been starved by the St. Mary's Pier. That is the email correspondence I received. There appears to be no evidence. I would love to see a report that says that a shoreline is not impacted by a massive blocker, because every single report across the planet links it as the primary cause. So I don't have an answer, but I do know that we cannot do it alone.
That's understood, and I know the uncertainty that's down there, and you know, we all would like to see that some resolution to that. So whatever we can do as a council, we will continue to do that. I don't know if you have any suggestions to remedy the situation short term, because this is going to get worse, and we resources year after year is going in. So I don't know if you and your group have any short-term solution that we can do without it being too costly.
The short-term solutions right now are about flood prevention and flood mitigation. That's us working very closely with Chief Weir and Fred Horhath, and they are not in any way a solution that anybody is prepared to live with. The Baird Report put four recommendations forward. The most expensive is the one that they recommended. It's a $16 million solution. And these are engineering solutions that are done all over the globe, right? So can you actually solve this problem? The answer is yes. It is done all over the globe. And, you know, we've heard people say, well, you put $16 million in and will it stand? And I just ask you to look at the St. Mary's Pier. It has stood very well, right? So we know without a doubt that those types of engineering solutions will do what is required.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor? Councillor Neal.
Yeah, through the chair, can you just expand a bit on the third bullet, please, Ms. Delegate?
So the third bullet, please aggressively pursue a shoreline protection restoration strategy as outlined in the Baird report. We know that $16 million, unless you have a magic pot of money, is not coming from the municipality. The $16 million is not coming from our community. So where does one get $16 million? Where does that come from? Well, you have St. Mary's that pulls massive amounts of stone out of the municipality of Clarington, which has actually reduced your flood resiliency dramatically, not just from the shoreline perspective, but also from the fact that we now have a wetland that has been cut by 45%. A report from the provincial body Intact for climate change adaptation last year said that if you leave a floodplain in its natural state, it reduces the cost of flooding by 45%. Well, ours is not natural, it's been quarried. So you have a massive international conglomerate, you have the province who gave all of the approvals, and the feds who also supported that process. There's only three places. So how do you make that happen? It will not happen through existing funds that you can apply to. Most of those do have pieces around public property versus private property. What we're talking about here, in my mind's eye, is actually a social justice issue, right? Our beach has been stolen, and it has put well over 50 families in harm's way. It was predicted, and what was predicted has happened. So how does one aggressively find the money in those three places? And as our local level of government, I'm very optimistic that you have that answer better than I do.
Okay. Through the chair, so what sort of feedback, if any, do you get from your MPPs? Have you been in touch with them?
I have met with Lindsay Park several times. I have not had any commitment from Lindsay, although Lindsay has said that without a doubt, if invited to the table, that the province would come to a working group meeting. Aaron O'Toole's office also said if there was invitation that they would come to a working group meeting. Both levels of government have actually said that they don't see any record that they've ever been invited to a working group meeting. So we're 2 years in, still having the same conversation about trying to bring everybody to the table. We're not even all at the table. We're all still having a conversation on whether or not there's been a causal factor of the pier. So, but we're running out of time. As was mentioned by another speaker, we have a family in our community that has now been displaced. Them and their family of four have been displaced. So how many, four children, and two adults have been displaced. How many more people need to lose their homes?
So through the chair, I just want to follow up. So you're saying that MPP Park and Aaron O'Toole's office have said they have not been invited to a working
Correct.
Meeting.
Okay.
I'm sure we can resolve that one. Now, I thought there was meetings hosted by Mr. O'Toole at the Beach Center. Was it last fall?
So that meeting was about Plan 2014.
Okay.
It was absolutely had nothing to do with our shoreline erosion in the St. Mary's Pier and the restoration of our shoreline. That they hosted the International Joint Commission in the ILOS LRB that regulates the water levels through the Moses Saunders Dam. Mm-hmm. We're invited to speak to the group about Plan 2014.
And that has nothing to do with this?
No.
I thought, which dam are you talking about? Through the chair?
Moses Saunders Dam in Cornwall.
I thought that had a lot to do with this.
So it's important to kind of try to, I know there's so many balls in the air, but we flooded. When we came to council in 2016, we had dealt with severe uprush and the lake levels were below normal, right? So it's important to distinguish the troubles our community is having from a high lake level. Even when the lake is normal, we are now in harm's way. Where Plan 2014 complicates things is, very quickly, Lake Erie is at all-time high. 85% of Lake Ontario comes from Lake Erie. The only way out is through the Moses Saunders Dam, and it is controlled by human beings. Plan 2014 is the plan that regulates Lake Ontario, and in 2017, it was changed. So it used to be called Plan 1958 for 50 years plus. It regulated the lake level. In 2017, the new plan, which is designed for higher highs, that's what Plan 2014 is, higher highs and lower lows. So we come now into the spring freshet with Lake Ontario a foot higher than we did for the last 50 years. So that extra foot causes more risk.
So through the chair, what is Mr. O'Toole's advice to you, if any?
I have not spoken to Mr. O'Toole specifically over the last little bit. No.
I see. Okay. And what was the were you at? I assume you're at the CLOCA meeting that was held in here in these chambers.
Correct.
Okay. And what was? I'm trying to recall what Councillor Trail's motion had tried to do that was defeated. What was that attempting to do?
So, in full disclosure, that process was baffling. So, the motions were put up, there were changes, amendments, and we were actually left in the council, sitting here, not having actually any clue what had happened, right? Several people walked away and really did not understand what the process was.
Through the chair, I recall a motion that she tried to put forward that didn't get enough votes to pass, but what would it have effectively done, do you recall?
That's my challenge, is I don't actually even fully understand what that whole process looked like. But ultimately, Councillor Trail has always been in conversation with us in support of the Baird Report, right? That without a shoreline protection strategy, that, changing building regulations and using stair tactics around 100-year flood modeling that takes a 7-foot wave from the upper watershed and down to our community, that these things are actually just distractions from the core issue.
So through the chair, just so I understand your position is, so if anybody came in with a new building permit request, expand their building, replace it, that should just be dealt with as normal?
Absolutely not. So, there are probably the biggest concern for us on their recommendations in the changes to the bylaws is that if our houses flood now, we cannot rebuild. So if a flood today takes out my foundation and or even if my house sits in standing water for 3 days. Any house that stands in water for 3 days must be torn down. That if that happens to me, I cannot rebuild my home. Yet, the policy that they're recommending to you is a 50 to 70 year voluntary disposition. In those 50 to 70 years, you have a 100% likelihood that we are going to flood, and we are going to flood due to shoreline erosion. So the policy says, don't let them rebuild, don't put in shoreline protection, and slowly build the buy the houses. So from a probability perspective, the policy is hostile. What we have is a 100% risk today that until the shoreline is restored, that all of those homes, all of our families are in serious harm's way.
So in terms of lake levels, I recall a number of years ago, say about 10 years ago, the big concern was low water levels on Lake Ontario. So are you saying that there was problems being experienced by Cedar Crest Beach even when they had low water levels on Lake Ontario?
So anytime there's severe water, low water levels, the risk is to drinking water, is to wells. Is that what you're asking?
No. I'm talking about the said you mentioned there was wave uprush, but so let's say the Lake Ontario was to go back to the levels it was, say, 10 or 12 years ago, where there was low levels, right? Concern was being expressed that, you know, people can't get into marinas and stuff like that. You're saying that still poses a danger to?
No. So when the lake is extremely low, we have a shore.
Okay.
Right? And the thing that you saw in Bart's presentation is when you have a shoreline, it takes the wave energy, right? So in November 2015, when we did experience wave uprush, and we have video footage of all of that as well, it was just slightly below an average lake level. So it wasn't extreme lows. It was just below an average lake level. And the wave energy pushed it up and over our walls. Right, so it's not about hot extreme highs and extreme lows, even at average, and that's the point I think Pauline was making, is it's any season, any time, the shoreline is gone, we are in harm's way. Until there is an engineering solution that restores the shoreline, we are in harm's way.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry, one further question, Mr. Chair. In terms of what you would like to see, let's say after staff come back with their recommendation, which I understand is in June. Is that the wording you're looking for? Aggressively pursue a shoreline protection and restoration strategy? I mean,
no,
it sounds kind of vague.
I suspect we would put a lot more thought into the wording. That's simply just for a PowerPoint presentation. But we would be very happy to help contribute.
Help draft it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure you would. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, do we have anything further? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sorry, Councillor Jones.
Just a very quick question. So the working group, how often does it meet and when does it meet next?
The working group has been disbanded.
Oh, okay.
Simply because the working group did brilliant things in short-term flood mitigation, prevention, and protection. So we did a lot of conversation. There was a lot of conversation about managing marsh overflow, about emergency response, and we now have a breakoff committee, really, that is between fire operations and the residents, and we meet 1 to 2 times a week. But the actual working group was intended to deal with finding an engineering solution and the funding. And that original group was supposed to have the province and the feds at the table. They never were. St. Mary's was at the table, but never without their lawyer. And the city didn't have their lawyer, CLOCA didn't have their lawyer, residents didn't have their lawyer, so it ended up really not making any progress at all. So that group has been disbanded.
So where would you stand then with getting Aaron O'Toole and Lindsay Park involved? So you had said that they were invited to the working group.
No, they said they would be. They weren't then.
Oh, right. So they said that they would be willing to come.
They would be willing.
So where would that stand now? I'm just trying to think, like, how can we get them back involved in this? And what your ideas are?
It is again extending that invitation in good faith that we have to get come together and have an honest dialogue about where we're at and how we're going to fix this problem, right? So to me, it isn't just Lindsay's office and Aaron's office. It's also the Ministry of Natural Resources has to be at the table.
And is that something that your community would do, or are you asking us to do that?
We are asking you.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you.